The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup Flashback.
Maybe they have a death wish.
President Trump triggers memories of the notorious Nixon tapes. With a warning for the FBI director he fired. Later,
staring out the window, looking at this cloudy day.
We do our own summer concert series in studio on the Weekend Roundup. I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. We'll get to that performance in a little bit to perhaps give us a break from this onslaught of news from Washington. But first, news from Washington. In a tweet Friday morning, President Trump warned fired FBI Director James Comey. He, quote, better hope that there are no tapes of our conversation before he starts leaking to the press. Of course, that reminds us of another president who did record his conversations, President Nixon. Many of those tapes included offensive remarks like this one, while Nixon was speaking to the late Reverend Billy Graham.
Maybe they have a death wish. You know, that's been the problem with our Jewish friends for centuries.
Here's how White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer responded to the tweet to Reuters reporter Jeff Mason.
Did President Trump record his conversations with former FBI Director Comey?
I assume you're referring to the tweet, and I've talked to the president. The president has nothing further to add on that.
Why did he say that? Why did he tweet that? What should we interpret from that?
As I mentioned, the president has nothing further to add on that.
Are there recording devices in the Oval Office or in the residence?
As I said for the third time, there is nothing further to add on that.
Correspondent Jeff Pagase has more on the president's conversations with Comey, whom he fired Tuesday.
I had a dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner because he wanted to stay on.
In an interview with NBC News, President Trump detailed his private January conversation with then FBI Director James Comey.
A dinner was arranged. I think he asked for the dinner. And he wanted to stay on as the FBI head. And I said, I'll consider. We'll see what happens. But we had a very nice dinner. And at that time, he told me, you are not under investigation.
But law enforcement sources who spoke to Comey tell a different story. They say Comey was invited to the White House, where the president asked the FBI director if he would pledge his loyalty to the president. Comey declined, instead telling Trump he would always be honest. The president twice more pressed Comey for loyalty, the third time asking for honest loyalty. To that, Comey responded, yes, you will have that.
There is no collusion between me and my campaign and the Russians.
Inside FBI headquarters, there are growing concerns the White House is trying to get in the way of the Bureau's Russia investigation. Calling it a crisis, one federal law enforcement official tells CBS News there is a whole lot of interfering happening.
Jeff Pagase reporting, and we'll talk to him a little later in the broadcast. The Justice Department says it's moving forward with the Russia investigation. Meanwhile, President Trump has threatened to cancel all future press briefings. Nixon also attacked the press. Let's talk with CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Steve.
Stephen, what do you make of the president's latest comments and White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer just dodging whether or not there actually is a recording of this conversation that the president mentioned?
Are there such tapes? Spicer said he wasn't aware of any, but he didn't say no. And he refused to acknowledge the notion that the president did have tapes. He did say it was not a threat that the president issued. But I'll tell you, Steve, here in Washington, the president's tweet storm Friday morning, 7 tweets over a period of 90 minutes, raised eyebrows sky high.
Was it significant that
Spicer just didn't flat out deny that there's any recordings going on at the White House.
Yes, I think it is significant, and it leaves the question open. Clearly, it was by design. Spicer seemed to look down at the podium, check his notes, and say that he would have nothing further to add about the president's tweet, that the tweet essentially speaks for itself. He even called it a statement of fact. I'm not sure how that squares, but he called it a statement of fact.
What about this threat to just cancel all future press briefings?
Sean Spicer said that the president is dismayed that these daily back and forths appeared to him to be gotcha games. Spicer did say that he and his team work really hard each day to answer our questions as truthfully as they can, but he allowed that there are times when they are asked a question and they aren't able to give the best answer because, frankly, they just don't know it. And that probably says more about the situation than anything.
Can we even predict what's next in this whole saga?
I don't think we can predict, in as much as I don't think any of this was predictable. What we saw in the last week was really striking. President Trump decided on his 110th day in office to dispatch the FBI director for only the second time in history that an FBI director has been fired. The first time in 1993 was after Bill Clinton determined that William Sessions had violated ethics rules, essentially using the FBI for his own personal benefit. And it was a widely reported scandal, and the president's decision didn't come at the time under a whole lot of scrutiny, although he was asked whether it would tend to politicize the FBI. Now there are questions about whether President Trump is demanding the loyalty, the personal loyalty, of anyone who serves in that post. On Friday, Sean Spicer explicitly denied reports that the president, at his first dinner with Comey in January, demanded Comey's loyalty. But that's the telling, as Comey told it, to those close to him. And it wound up in the New York Times on Friday morning. The press secretary, I asked him, I said, how important is it that the FBI director be personally loyal to the president? And Spicer said what the president really seeks is someone who's loyal to the rule of law.
And the reaction to Washington lawmakers, what's that been, especially in the context of the Russia investigation at DOJ?
Keep your eyes and ears on Republicans who are prominent in the Senate, particularly the ones who are taking an active role in this Russia investigation. Richard Burr, the Republican senator from North Carolina, was one of the first to say on Tuesday how concerned he was about the fact that the FBI director was being fired in the midst of this investigation.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy, thanks again. Great talking with you, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
The Senate Intelligence Committee leading one of those Russia investigations is pressing for more information now from ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
As the committee looks into Russian meddling in the presidential election, it had requested documents from Michael Flynn regarding his connections in Russia. Flynn, through his lawyer, declined the request last month, so now the committee's issuing the subpoena. Flynn's lack of candor regarding those connections to administration officials cost him his job as National Security Advisor. Previously, Flynn had offered to testify before the Senate and House Intelligence Committees in exchange for immunity. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
Former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates testified to Congress Monday that she warned the White House in January that Flynn hadn't been honest about his contacts with Russia.
That created a compromise situation, a situation where the National Security Advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians.
It took the president weeks to fire Flynn. Still to come on the weekend roundup, the U.S. weighing how many more troops to send to Afghanistan.
What I'd like to be able to do when I go to NATO is say, this is the U.S. plan.
That's next on the weekend roundup. On the CBS News weekend roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. We may learn soon how many troops the U.S. will send to Afghanistan to back up forces there trying to fight back a Taliban resurgence. Our Cammie McCormick traveled with Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joe Dunford, to Tel Aviv.
Joint Chiefs Chairman General Joseph Dunford said the Afghan security forces have suffered heavy losses. The war has been described as a stalemate, and it's clearly not moving in the direction the U.S. wants. So proposals are before the president, and a decision could come ahead of Dunford's meeting with his NATO counterparts.
What I'd like to be able to do when I go to NATO is say, this is the U.S. plan, and this is the overall requirement identified by the commander. So we'll start to have conversations to try to generate the forces to meet that requirement.
The plan could also include new authorities for U.S. forces working with Afghans in smaller units and closer to the front lines. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
Baragio, you're editor of the Long War Journal for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and it's certainly been a long war in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it sure has. It's 15-plus years now of fighting the Taliban, al-Qaeda, various jihadist groups, and now including the Islamic State.
Do you think more troops there will make a difference?
What we're hearing is about 3,000 more troops in the form of military advisors to the Afghan military are what is being looked at. I don't think that's enough to tip the balance in the favor of the Afghan government, but what it could do is it could help stem the tide of the Taliban advance. Over the last two-plus years, the Taliban has gotten to a point where, and this is from the U.S. government, U.S. Special Investigator General for Afghanistan says that the Taliban controls or contests about 40% of Afghanistan. That pretty much comports with my research on this. It's a pretty close numbers. The Taliban claims it controls about half, so we're not all that far apart in estimates. So I think that some additional troops can help roll some of that back, but it's not going to be enough to beat the Taliban all the way back and get a real military victory in this.
How did the Taliban get all of these recent gains that we've been seeing on the battlefield there?
Well, with the withdrawal of U.S. forces after the surge, I think the fundamental problem is the Obama administration didn't make it conditions-based on when it conducted its draw. Instead, it did it on an artificial timetable. The Taliban was able to preserve its forces and wait for American troops to pull back. And then what it did was it took on the Afghan troops, which are far less motivated, aren't as good soldiers, and they're just, the Taliban has a lot more success in battling Afghan forces than it does American and NATO forces. And that, as well as the continued support from, particularly from Pakistan and on a smaller level from countries like Iran and now Russia. So that's been a lifeline to the Taliban. And at the end of the day, the Taliban are ideologically motivated for this fight. I mean, it's using its radical form of Islam as a rallying point to reestablish the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. That's the name the Taliban gave its government and continues to do so. So at the end of the day, it's a far more motivated force than the Afghan military, which deals with the police forces that deal with corruption and poor governance and all these other problems. When the Afghan government is forced to govern, they don't do it very well, and their security forces fall into this trap as well.
Bill Raggio with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
South Korea has a new president from the left after years of conservative leadership, and that may put the longtime Asian ally at odds with President Trump. CBS News reporter Don Kirk is in Seoul with more.
President Moon would definitely like to meet President Trump. That's not to mean that he's going to be President Trump's yes man. He might meet with him and take exception to some of President Trump's remarks, notably President Trump's remark that Korea owes $1 billion for THAAD, the counter-missile battery that's implanted amid great controversy. Another issue will be the Korea-U.S. free trade agreement, which Trump says he wants to look into.
A corruption scandal brought down Moon's predecessor, Park Geun-hye. The U.S. is poised to announce new rules banning flyers from airports in Europe from carrying on large electronics like laptops. Here's CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
The proposed ban is based on growing concern about an explosive getting past airport scanners. The ban, already in place at 10 airports in the Middle East and Africa, prohibits electronics larger than a cell phone in the passenger cabin. If expanded, it could potentially impact all of the 60 European airports with direct flights to the U.S.
The bottom line is keeping terrorists with explosives off planes.
John Pistol is the president of Anderson University and the former TSA administrator.
Just from London Heathrow Airport, there's about 110 flights a day that fly to the U.S. It presents a challenge. How do you do that in a way that is efficient and effective?
An airline insider says it will be a logistical mess, likely to require secondary screenings of passengers and longer wait times.
The question is, how good is the intelligence? I don't have the specifics on this one other than to say, based on my experience, 31 years, with a top secret security clearance, that it must be pretty good in order to justify these measures.
Top European Union officials are demanding urgent meetings with the U.S. to discuss the looming ban.
Chris Van Cleve reporting. A cyber attack Friday targeted hospitals in the U.K.
A number of hospitals in London, Liverpool, and elsewhere across Britain have been hit by a huge cyber attack. National Health Service computer and phone systems were knocked out. Some GPs are affected as well. Hackers have reportedly demanded ransoms to be paid in bitcoins. The affected hospitals have canceled all non-urgent treatment. People have been told not to visit emergency rooms. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Back home, more changes to the retail landscape expected as sales at Kohl's and Macy's fall. Hundreds of Macy's stores due to close. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson spoke about it with CBS this morning.
This is a bloodbath. It really is. Normally, I use very moderated words in describing
it. Bloodbath is not moderated.
It's a bad
situation.
Not
a moderating word.
And when you think about the fact we've been in an economic expansion, wages are up, oil prices are low, consumer confidence is very, very high. This should be a period of manna from heaven for retail, and it is not.
So what's happening? What's wrong? Well,
and is it because of Amazon?
Yeah, what's wrong?
It's not just Amazon. So Amazon gets a lot of the conversation when really, when you think about it, they are representing about 45% of all online sales. So everything we buy, nearly half is being bought at Amazon online. However, 85% of retail sales are still occurring in brick and mortar stores. 85%. So most of us, the vast majority of us, are walking into a store to buy things. Part of this has been driven by the fact that malls were overbuilt. From 1970 to 2015, malls were built at twice the rate of U.S. population growth.
But there are some retailers that are doing okay. All retailers are not created equal.
That's correct. So some of them are doing well. Those are ones where it's experiential, where they have a real niche. One that is doing very well is Ulta.
Oh, beauty.
I mean, beauty, Sephora, Ulta, they are hitting the cover off the ball. Ulta stock is up 17% this year. And one of the things that's helping the beauty retailers is YouTube. There's a lot of these demonstration videos around makeup,
show you how to put on makeup,
and then people are going in and buying them.
So what about Walmart?
Walmart is actually doing better because of their online has really picked up.
Up next, the music of Chris Cassaday on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Check out CBS Radio News podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Scott Pelley every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest-running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our weekend review magazine show. It's all available from CBSRadioNews.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, we're starting our own CBS Radio Summer Concert Series of sorts. This weekend, we've got Chris Cassaday. He's a local singer in the D.C. area. He's a guitarist, a musician, a songwriter. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Chris, tell me about your musical style.
I like to call it folk funk. It's fun to say. It kind of describes my music. It's folky, almost bluesgrassy, but with a little funk mixed in to up the tempo a little bit.
Give us a listen.
This song is called Could Have Been Me. It's off my brand new album, Stranger Places.
Oh, my baby left last night. Didn't leave a note. Took all her clothes and God only knows what else. I can't believe she'd go. Could have been that I didn't make it home till 3. It could have been me. I may have yelled one time. Even more. Just looking out for you, I have no doubt that you've seen it all before. Could have been all that drunken jealousy. dare you even cut the line. Tell your big secrets, won't you keep them from me? 'Cause that don't ever cross my mind. Could have been things you were not meant to see. It could have been me.
Chris Cassaday, excellent job. I wish we had a studio audience, but it's just you and me.
Thank you.
Tell me about how you got started as a musician.
I went to James Madison University, and I was always playing guitar a little bit, and I would go to open mics. I kept playing more and more, getting better and better, and then I graduated. So open mics here became paid gigs, became playing at clubs, opening for other bands, and now I got two records out, and I do this regularly.
How different is this this new album you have out from your first?
A lot of people have said it's more mature. The songwriting is more mature, which I find a compliment. Production's a little better, but the basic feel's the same. I like to try to make every song sound like a different genre, and I think I did a good job of that on the new album as I did on the first album.
And you've got another song.
Yeah, I'll play another song for you. I was going to play one from my first album. This song was actually picked up by XM Radio.
Our arch nemesis.
Your arch nemesis. No. Yeah, sorry. Am I allowed to say
they're
that
great
here?
People.
The Coffee House on XM Radio, they take independent singer-songwriter music, so I sent my stuff in, and sure enough, they liked this one. It's called My Oh My, and I'll give it a shot for you.
Got a suitcase, a phonograph, and memories full of pain. Thinking mind over matter, that's what got me this far. I got this loneliness deep down in my chest, and it slowly surrounds my heart. See, the months pass through an empty glass, flew 3,000 miles to escape a pest, but she cannot contain no more. No, she cannot restrain no more. Out in comes the fall, yeah. She forgets it all. She hears the radio playing the song he knows. Turn it up loud till her mind says let go. Hope you're all you're meant to be. Yeah. Don't think of you, just look at me. Yeah. See you everywhere I go. The things I keep close, they tend to lose. Are you gonna lose hope? I'm staring out the window, looking at this cloudy day. I got my raincoat, my guitar case, and I'm apt to lead the way. Thinking, my, oh my, how'd I lose her this time? And I got this loneliness deep down in my chest, and it slowly invades my mind. See the passing days through a smoky haze, drove 1,000 miles, try to change my ways, but I cannot contain no more. No, I cannot restrain no more. Out in comes the fall, yeah, I forget it all, yeah. Hear the radio playing the song she knows, turn it up loud till her mind says let go. Hope you're all you're meant to be, yeah, 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 you just think of me, yeah, see you everywhere I go, the things I keep close, they tend to lose hope, are you gonna lose hope, whoa. Forget it all, yeah, we hear the radio. opening the song we know. Turn it up now till our minds say let go. You know it's you I'm glad to see. Well, I got you, now I am free. Love you everywhere I go. The things I keep close, they tend to lose hold. Are you gonna lose hold?
Musician Chris Cassaday, thank you for performing for us on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Steve, thanks so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, measles in Minnesota.
We have gone 0 days without having a new case.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Nestle is at the center of a water war in Southern California. More from Maria Villarreal.
In the San Bernardino Mountains outside Los Angeles, this intricate maze of pipes collects and funnels tens of millions of gallons of water each year. It's the original source for Nestle's Arrowhead water, but the steep terrain covered in thick brush is only easily accessible by helicopter. Larry Lawrence, who manages this spring for Nestle Waters, brought us deep into the canyon.
These are naturally flowing sources. We don't pump anything. We don't siphon anything. It just naturally flows in the pipe. From the top of the pipeline to the very bottom is 7.2 miles.
At the bottom, tanker trucks load and transport it to a nearby plant where they bottle the water. The water business is booming. Bottled water sales are up nearly 9% over the last year, which has sent Nestle looking for new sources to meet customer demand. Of their current 40 water sources around the country, 11 are in California, a state dealing with long-term drought concerns.
Every gallon of water that is taken out of a natural system for bottled water is a gallon of water that doesn't support a natural ecosystem.
Nestle has faced protests over its water collection in California, both because of the drought and the fact that this site is on public land. While the company takes about 30 million gallons each year, they pay just $524 to the U.S. Forest Service for the permit.
I think it's fair to say that in this case, our public agencies have dropped the ball.
The Forest Service is now reviewing Nestle's permit for the first time in 30 years. They declined our request for an interview.
I don't think there's anybody, quite frankly, that outperforms.
Nelson Switzer is Nestle Water's chief sustainability officer.
Some people would say, this is the people's water. Is it fair that you guys make so much money off of it?
Nestle has water rights, of course, in this area. From a legal standpoint, of course it's fair. From a perception standpoint, I understand why people are asking that question. But water belongs to no one.
Switzer says Nestle takes its responsibility as a water steward very seriously.
The sustainability of the supply is paramount. And that if our activities were to compromise the sustainability of that supply, we would stop operating. I hope people remember that water itself is a renewable resource. As long as that is managed properly, that system will be renewable forever.
It may be renewable, but as long as companies like Nestle make a profit off it, the debate over public natural resources will continue.
Maria Villarreal reporting from the San Bernardino Mountains. Forecasters say we may see fewer hurricanes this year.
I'm Peter King. El Nino's warmer Pacific waters make it more difficult for hurricanes to form in the Atlantic. National Hurricane Center specialist John Cangelosi says a neutral El Nino would mean more wind shear in the Atlantic.
And wind shear is usually good for us, which means it keeps the hurricane sort of suppressed a little bit.
Cangelosi says forecasters are still crunching the numbers for the seasonal forecast due out in a couple of weeks. He says if this prediction plays out,
there may be a little lower than average hurricane activity, and that's our hope.
Atlantic season starts June 1st. Peter King, CBS News Orlando.
A new study on how often kids visit the ER is alarming some parents.
At the skate park and at school, kids are on a roll. And whether they're riding bikes or boards, there's always a chance for a fall.
Unfortunately, with injuries, it's not a matter of if they're going to happen, but when they're going to happen.
Dr. Marseille White was part of a new study that found about 50 children go to the emergency room every hour with injuries that happened while riding a bike, skateboard, scooter, or skates. Bike and skateboard injuries are down, but ER visits from scooters and skates are up significantly.
It's very important that they wear helmets for safety.
But that's not always happening. The study found nearly 40% of parents admitted their child does not always wear a helmet when riding. Many parents said their kids think the helmets aren't cool or complain they're uncomfortable.
I think it's probably one of the hardest things to get kids to do, you know, next to, like, eating their greens.
But experts say it can lead to a serious head injury.
Concussions can have a very long-lasting effect on kids' ability to learn and interact, and so we want to ensure that their brain is protected because it's still growing and developing.
Dr. White says besides protective gear, it's also important to make sure kids ride in safe places away from cars. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Another thing is sending a surge of kids to hospitals, measles, especially in Minnesota, where health officials are battling the worst outbreak of the disease in 30 years. Correspondent Jamie Yukas visited Children's Minnesota Hospital on the front lines of that battle there, where dozens of kids have been treated for measles.
Have you gone a day without having a new case?
We have gone 0 days without having a new case.
Patsy Stinchfield is the director for infection control at Children's Minnesota Hospital. She says the measles outbreak started about 4 weeks ago. 46 of the 48 confirmed cases are in children 10 years old or younger.
I just finished doing rounds on these children, and they are miserable. They're in the hospital. They have IVs. They're not drinking. They have terrible coughs. Some have pneumonia.
The measles virus commonly travels through the air, where it can live for up to 2 hours, making it more contagious than the flu. The only vaccine available in the U.S. to prevent the spread of the disease is the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, or MMR.
1 in 1,000 children who get measles will have encephalitis or infection in their brain. They can have permanent brain damage. They can have blindness or deafness. And so we wouldn't vaccinate if this was just a rashy illness. This is a very serious disease.
In 2014, almost 90% of 2-year-old Minnesota children were vaccinated against measles. In the Somali community, that number plummeted to about 40%. Community leader Abdurizak Behi says it's because of an unfounded fear spawned by anti-vaccine activists that MMR causes autism.
Some parents, they said, at least measles is curable because they believe that thing is causing autism and they don't have a choice.
Ikram Mohammed is a Somali-American mother of 5 children. 4 have received the MMR vaccine. But she waited until they were older, even after getting measles herself.
Well, what was that like?
A lot of hospital stay.
Mohammed doesn't plan to vaccinate her 5-year-old until he starts school in the fall.
There is this big decision to make, you know, are you going to choose to take the risk to vaccinate and get this long-term chronic illness? Or are you going to take the risk of trying to do everything that you can in your power to prevent your child from getting the measles? That's a very hard choice.
Doctors say false information linking vaccines to autism is hurting children.
Do you get frustrated that this misinformation still is out there?
It is frustrating because we know these diseases are contagious, they can spread, they can take children's lives, and all we have to do is go back to before we had vaccines, where the United States had 4 million cases of measles, and we will go back there if we don't continue to vaccinate.
Studies show no direct link between that MMR vaccine and an increased risk of autism. Coming up, we talk to CBS News correspondent Jeff Pagase on police and race on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS Radio News, the original radio news network, is now on Amazon Alexa. Amazon Alexa. Whether you have the Amazon Echo, Amazon Tap, or Echo Dot, you can listen to our newscasts just by setting CBS Radio News to your flash briefing.
Here's your flash briefing.
Or just ask for CBS News and hear our 24/7 stream through our partners at TuneIn.
This is CBS Radio News on TuneIn.
Wherever you want to listen, CBS Radio News is there.
On the Weekend Roundup, we're talking now with CBS News Justice and Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pagase about his new book, Black and Blue, Inside the Divide Between the Police and Black America. Thanks for talking with us, Jeff.
My pleasure.
You know, every time we report on police who don't face charges or convictions following accusations of brutality, we hear about the need for justice reform. Jeff, what do these folks mean when they talk about reforms that are needed to the justice system?
Well, over the years, and part of this is what I address in Black and Blue, people in the community have felt like police are held to a different standard. And when they complain about police tactics, nothing is ever done. And that has been part of the problem at the heart of this divide. And that's why I wanted to write about it. I wanted to talk to both sides of this issue. You have police officers who feel that they are doing too much. I had the head of the Chicago FOP, and that's where I went before Chicago and its crime problems really bubbled to the surface of the headlines. But I went there. I talked to the president of the FOP, who told me, quote, "We can't raise your kid. We can't cure your psychosis." And in essence, saying that we are being asked to do too much. And, oh, by the way, fight crime. And, oh, by the way, raise revenue for these cities by writing tickets. And so there are people on both sides who acknowledge that there are problems. And I want to do deal with some of those problems, talk about some of those problems in these neighborhoods. And I talked to people in the community who were very honest and blunt. And that's what I wanted. I went there without my television crew. I went there with my two phones. I had two recordings going, and I sat down and I talked to people in the community who told me that they felt like police treated them like livestock. They felt like there was this suspicion. No matter what they did in their community, police always looked at them with suspicion. So I wanted blunt talk, and I wanted it in one book from both sides, so that anyone who is interested in this issue can go there, see both sides, and get an accurate picture of why this division exists.
When did Officer Friendly die? You know, when did that relationship with police take a turn? Or has it always been like this?
No. Well, listen, there have always been underlying issues there. If you are Black in America, chances are pretty good that you've had that talk, especially if you're a young African-American man. And I grew up, my parents came from the South, Birmingham, Montgomery, Alabama, and they grew up in the South during the heat of the civil rights movement. So they were involved in protests. They experienced the dogs, the billy clubs, the hoses. That was their upbringing. And so they raised me to be aware of that. And I had that talk that a lot of African young men get from their parents. In other words, respect the police, just make it to the precinct. Because if you make it there alive, we can help you. I had that talk. But I also have 25 years covering law enforcement. So I've seen both sides. And I know that there are 99.9% of the police officers in this country are doing their jobs. And they're doing it for the right reasons. They didn't get into law enforcement to make money. They got into law enforcement to help their communities. And they are offended that there are people in this country who think that they're all bad apples. So I wanted that to come out in this book. But I also, Steve, got into some meetings between top law enforcement officials and President Obama during that very dark week last July, where there was the Dallas police shooting. There was the police shooting of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile in the Minneapolis area. And so I was able to get information about these meetings between top law enforcement officials in this country and President Obama, and they were heated at times. So Black and Blue gets into that with information that I think most people aren't aware of.
And when we're talking about convicting those bad apples, the bar, as you know, is very high to not only convict but even charge police, right?
Well, that's right, and we saw that. With the shooting in North Charleston, Michael Slager, who shot Walter Scott in the back as he was running away. That is video that the whole world has seen. And so that is an example of that. And that's why you have people in the African-American community feel like, you know, these police officers are not being disciplined for their bad acts. And there are people in the ranks of the police who say, if they are not going to stop and prevent these bad apples in our ranks from doing bad deeds over and over and over again, well, what do you expect to happen? Because there has been a culture, according to our research, from some of these Justice Department investigations, whether it's in Ferguson or Baltimore or Chicago, where complaints against officers have gone unenforced. And so there are police officials who will tell you that that alone leads to problems. You have to stop these problems before they become bigger.
CBS News correspondent Jeff Pagace on the Weekend Roundup talking about his book Black and Blue. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Now to a story about a second chance at permanent marker. CBS's Tony DeCoppel visits one tattoo parlor doing just that.
Are you ready for this, buddy?
Yeah.
Randy Sturgill knows a lot about getting tattoos. The 28-year-old has them all over his body. Most he got while serving 8 years in prison for armed robbery. But today isn't about new ink. It's about becoming a new man.
Let's see your hands.
And basically what that is a Nazi death head.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the same ambulance that was on a Nazi officer's helmet.
Why did you get it?
You know, it sounds really stupid, but I mean, I did it, I guess, kind of fit in, you know?
If you've made that mistake and you're past that in your life, we're going to help you out.
One day each week, shop owners Elizabeth and Dave Cutlip cover up racist and gang-related tattoos for free.
We had someone come in here that had tattoos on their face of a gang that they were in prison.
We referred him to get laser treatment, and on the way home, I said to Dave, we could probably help a lot of people, Dave, you know, cover up these gang tattoos so they could get jobs and re-enter society and not have that stigma attached to them.
I don't like that eye. Let's get rid of it.
Typically, a cover-up can run anywhere from a few hundred to well more than $1,000, and the Cutlips aren't only comping local customers. In January, they made their offer to the whole world.
We posted it on Facebook that we were going to help people, thinking that we were just going to help people in our community. And I just see the numbers, like, they're going up to thousands and thousands and thousands. And then messages started pouring in and pouring in and pouring in.
The guy who walked in that first day with the tattoos on his face.
I wish I knew his name. But he had tears in his eyes, and it kind of shook me up.
Why does it affect you so much?
I think it's important that everybody gets a second chance.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, horoscopes, recipes, whatever. The Weekend Roundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dori Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.